Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
People can change anything they want to. And that means everything in the world. Show me any country, and there'll be people in it. It's time to take the humanity back into the center of the ring and follow that for a time. You know, think on that. Without people, you're nothing. Without people, you're nothing.
Stoke the fire.
Great shirt you got on there, Matt.
Thanks, dude. What are you wearing? Let's have a look. Oh, David Attenborough.
Yeah, the old Attenborough shirt. It's funny because I just got stopped in town recently from wearing this shirt because it's a big hit. So for people who are watching.
David Attenborough with a snake wrapped around him in kind of death metal font.
And then the death metal font says, "We are a plague on the earth."
Which is very apt for today's guest on the themes of nature and death metal. And obviously Attenborough is just an all-time legend. We were talking about him in a recent Patreon, I'm sure we were, weren't we, in quite a lot of detail.
We were. Yeah, he's one of my heroes, and when he dies, I'm going to mourn. He's the guy that really helped me fall in love with wildlife and wild animals and stuff like that. So I think of him often when I'm out in nature. The sense of wonderment he still has at his age is just amazing. So yeah, nature's a good, that's actually a really good tie-in, Matt. I like that. It's good.
It's all about the segues, my friend.
It is.
King of the segues right here. Before we jump on into this brilliant conversation, just a very quick, huge thank you to everybody who is supporting the show via Patreon. Patreon.com/StokeTheFire is the place to go if you would like to delve into what is now probably a catalog of podcasts almost of the same weight as the public show itself. I would say at this stage we're getting close to as many Patreon podcasts as we are podcasts in total. So if you love this show, if you want more of it, if you want more of the solo episode with me and Jesse, more listener podcasts, playlists, Zoom hangouts, there's the Discord chat happening over there. And obviously, most importantly, it just means you get to support this show and enable us to keep doing it. So yeah, please do check out the Patreon page if you haven't already. Thank you to everybody who is already supporting us via there. And look out for lots more incredible bonus content in the not too distant future. But I think without further ado, Jesse, let's get the wheels rolling on this one. Very excited for this chat. Tell us a little bit about our guest and then we'll bring him onto the show.
Yeah, I was trying to remember how I even discovered his music. And I couldn't really put my finger on it, but it came across, it might have been through Instagram, because I follow a lot of metal, death metal, cult. I love all weird underground punk rock and black metal and death metal. I love extreme music. And his name popped up, Black Braid, and I saw the visual that he put up for one of his songs, and it was two natives in war paint, and it just looked grim, but it was black metal. I was like, how? Wait, what? Because you don't think, usually, I mean, apparently this has been a thing for a while. I'm sure John can fill us in a little bit, but black metal and Native American and First Nation cultures mixing. And to me, it was like, I listened to the music, I checked out the visuals, and I was like, this is brilliant. I never put the two together. It makes total sense. So I started listening and I actually reached out to him and I was like, dude, I love what you're doing. This is amazing. And turns out he lives an hour and a half north of where I live in the Adirondack Mountains. We talked about nature. So it was a lot in common right off the bat. And I was like, I got to get this guy on the podcast to talk about his culture, where he comes from, his music. And since then, I would say in the past couple months, and he's kind of blown up a little bit, and it's exciting to see. So let's get him on here. This is Black Braid. I'm going to call him John, but his Mohawk name is Skaga Sawa. Hopefully I said that right. I tried rehearsing it. So John, please welcome to Stoke the Fire podcast, my friend.
What's up, guys?
How you doing,
brother? Glad to be here.
Very cool. Thanks for coming on, my man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's exciting. Release is in 3 days, so.
Wow, an opportune time to be talking to you then. I love moments like this. I've been interviewing people for years, and I know, obviously Jesse knows way more than I do from the other side of the, you know, the coin of being on the precipice of releasing something that you've been working so hard on in private for so long. And it's that, you know, that home stretch in between when it's all yours, and then from release point onwards, it belongs then to the world, doesn't it? And it's out of your hands as music should be. It should exist out there for everybody. But I know that the moments that lead up to that moment are incredibly exciting. And this is your first major, like, proper release, right? I've been checking out your Spotify. There's a couple of singles on there, but this is your first full-length record.
Yeah, absolutely. I just I put out the third single this past Friday. But up until that, it was only two singles out for like the first 6 months. I started doing Blackbird stuff probably about 6 months ago. Wow. So it hasn't even been that long. I think the first single came out in the middle of February, I want to say. Yeah.
Yeah. And then not to mention the video as well that you just put out is stunning. It's just breathtakingly beautiful. The imagery, and it really kind of like, I think kind of defines what you're going for and really brings to life what you're doing. Not to mention the fact that you look epic as fuck in that thing as well too. Well done with that video. And that's who shot that video?
That's all in-house. Like, we do pretty much everything ourselves. I'm not really interested in labels or anything else, and I'm super lucky to have my wife who handles like most of the back end stuff for me, and she's also an amazing photographer and videographer, and she does design too. So yeah, but that video was shot completely between me and her. She took all the shots of me, and then there's a tiny bit of stock footage in it, but most of the nature footage was stuff that either me or her just shot with a gimbal around here somewhere.
Amazing. Yeah, I want to get into more of that later, but let's start at the beginning like we'd love to do on this show. So you're in the Adirondacks now. Where were you born and raised? Give us a little background on your life and where you come from, my friend.
Yeah, so I pretty much grew up around here. I was born and raised in the country, so it's very similar to where I live now, actually. But I grew up maybe an hour south of here, hour and a half, in like the country. Little farm town outside of Albany there. So I didn't really go too far. It's funny actually, because I traveled the world for my 20s and stuff all over the country, but you always end up like, I guess I got sucked back in at some point. Like, the Adirondacks have really always felt like home to me. I grew up, like I said, maybe an hour and a half outside of them, but my family is huge. Nature oriented. We've been coming here to camp and hunt and fish and stuff since I can remember, since I was could walk pretty much. Like, I grew up in these mountains, so they've always really felt like home to me. And then me and my wife bought this home here, I think it's been 2 or 3 years now. But yeah, when we started looking, when we were looking to buy, like, I knew I wasn't gonna look outside of the Adirondacks. This place has been special to me as long as I can remember. So
I love it. Yeah. I don't know much about the Adirondacks. I've only been up there a few times. I do live in the Catskills, but it's a vast difference. I think the Catskills are like the Adirondacks light. It's a very mellow sort of mountain area, where I think where you are, I know where you are, is a lot more wild, more wildlife, and much more vast as well. I'm actually going to be going up there in 2 weeks from now or so. Just to start exploring and doing some trails up there, because I've been very curious about the Adirondacks for various reasons. But yeah, just stunning beauty. I think people don't really realize how vast and beautiful it is. And most people, when you mention New York, they don't think wilderness. They don't think mountains. They think New York City, of course. And it's funny when I you mentioned traveling the world. When I travel the world and I say and live in New York, people are like, oh, New York City. I'm like, nah, man, I live in the woods with like bears and like.
Yeah, it's the same thing up here, man. Like, I think the Adirondack Park is it's like 30,000 square, I don't know, it's huge.
Massive. Yeah,
it's a huge park. I heard that you could fit Yellowstone in it four times over and still have room,
which is unfathomable for most people, because most people look at Yellowstone as this massive park. And
yeah,
I personally went there during the middle of the pandemic, my fiance and I took a road trip, and it's actually not that big. It's funny. We drove through. We're like, that's it. That's Yellowstone. That's it. So yeah, fascinating. Yeah. So nature has definitely been part of your life since day one, as far back as you can remember.
Yeah, definitely. It's always been a huge part of me. I mean, I grew up with it. My parents are right in that same mindset. So I never really saw it another way, I guess. That makes sense.
Have you got a big family, John? You got many brothers and sisters? Was it just you? Like, what was the kind of the sibling situation growing up?
No, I'm an only child. So I think that probably played into it a bit too. Like, growing up in the country like that, I mean, the nearest house from us was like a quarter mile away. Like, I couldn't like go play with other kids or anything, you know? So, and this was like before the internet and shit too. I'm about to be 33. So I grew up in like the 90s, 2000s. And the internet was kind of like, people were using MySpace and shit when I was in high school. But even so, like at that point, I still lived in the country and like no one had internet. So it was a different time. But yeah, when I was growing up, like I was alone. I was an only child and there really wasn't much to do. So I would like in the summer, you know, I'd be outside 14 hours a day. I'd just go out there and wake up and go outside and play. And then I come back in when it was dark. Like, and that's how like most of the kids in my town were too. Like if my friends came over, we'd do the same shit. We'd just go outside for the entire day because there was nothing else going on around there. So just being outside and growing up in nature was almost like the natural state of things for me when I was young.
I've been reading a book at the moment called Quiet, and it's about trying to find, you know, stillness and peace and inner quiet as much as external quiet in the busy world we live in today. And the author of the book was pointing out that, you know, kids now, they don't really grow up with that idea of playing outside and the idea of occupying your mind with just, you know, your own thoughts is almost like terrifying to young people now. And I think it's so important to shape, you know, an overall balanced view of the world, to be comfortable on your own and to sit with nature. And it's something that we talk about a lot on this show. And, you know, I think when you look at high school culture, in particular in teenage culture, the kid that's on their own and maybe a bit introspective is deemed the weirdo, certainly by today's standards. And I think it's really important that, you know, you had that experience. I definitely did too. And I know Jesse did, of being able to go out and just play and make your own fun and find the joys in life without devices and things like that. So it sounds kind of like a pretty blissful, dare I say, upbringing. Was it happy, or was there, you know, stuff going on which made it less so?
No, I'd agree. It's yeah, I wouldn't trade it for anything really. I mean, you don't really realize what that means to you as a child, you know, like I didn't realize that that was such a blessing and such a rare thing until I was almost 30, probably before I started like fully comprehending it. But yeah, I mean, I definitely wouldn't have wanted it any other way. And I do feel pretty bad for kids growing up now where technology is just like in their face, whether they want it or not. And stepping away isn't nearly as easy as it used to be.
Yeah, I think it affects kids' mental health for sure. And then you talk about, you know, being alone when you were a kid. And I definitely had those moments too. You know, I was surrounded by people because I did live in different environments. But there were times in my life when, you know, I lived on a farm in Wisconsin for 2 years and soulless was everything. And I would just make up stuff, walk in the cornfields, going out for long walks. And that stuff, I think, helps me now as an adult, because when I'm not feeling okay, I retreat to nature to find my okay, to find my balance, to find my center, especially with touring and playing music and creativity. I find if I'm feeling stifled creatively, I'll go out into nature. So nature definitely seems to play a role in your lyrics as well, in the themes as well. But I'm curious to your background. So what is, you do have a native background, but specifically, do you know what tribal, and also were your parents, how was that whole dynamic with your family and growing up in that culture or around that culture, or were you not embedded in it and discovered it later? How did that work with you?
Yeah. So That's a pretty interesting and complicated question. But I'll give you guys the short.
That's why we're here.
You can give us the long, complicated answer as well. We live for that stuff.
So yeah, I'm not tribally enrolled. I was adopted at birth, and then brought up here and raised in the north. So I'm like a Southern Indian. I don't have Mohawk blood. And even though I've lived on Mohawk land my whole life, which comes into the Skagasawa thing, I decided to take a Mohawk name to honor them because I don't really have much of a connection with a different tribal community. Mm. And I have lived in this area my entire life, and the Adirondacks is such a strong focal point for me. And, you know, it's their tribal land, among others. But yeah, I'm getting a little off the topic, I guess. But yeah, so growing up, I was I didn't have much contact with, like, you know, I had no exposure to where I was actually born in the South. And then I could but up here, like, my parents did make it a point for me to be involved in, like, other indigenous things, and then get me involved in the culture, like, on a more national level. At a young age, like, I was going to powwows, and I learned a lot about the Iroquois and the Haudenosaunee and the Mohawk and the Algonquin and whatever, because that's where I grew up, and that's, like, what was available. And we would go to powwows and events around here and stuff. So I guess it's pretty eclectic, because I did have exposure to that stuff growing up, but it's weird because it's like I'm not like a blood member of any of those tribes. And then at the same time, it wasn't coming from my family directly either, like it normally would, you know, like I was getting it from third parties. Like, my mom would connect me with my parents are amazing. They made sure that those opportunities were always in my life pretty much from the time I could walk, you know, like I grew up knowing a lot about my heritage, and it was never a topic they avoided or anything.
I absolutely love that you were adopted and they put that as a priority. I think that speaks volumes about their character. I commend them for that. That's beautiful, my friend. I love that. And the fact that you are paying respects to the lands that you're on, that you've kind of like were raised by. So that spirit of those tribes is within you. You might not have the blood, but, you know, it resides within you because you grew up there. That's very insightful. I like that a lot.
Yeah. And there's, you know, there's so, I think a lot of people don't realize how many natives there are in this country that have been displaced or, you know, lost contact with their tribe or their immediate families or anything. There's a lot of rough history in this world that kind of gets swept under the rug. So I kind of want to, like, maybe draw a little attention to that with Black Braid 2, just to, you know, there are a ton of us out there that are totally native that don't have tribal affiliations or have never lived in a native community or had native parents or, you know, a native mentor or anything. So a lot of the times when people think of Native Americans, they just think of, like, Sitting Bull or, you know, some dude with a headdress and a peace pipe. And it's like, there's a lot of us flying under the radar that it's a lot more complicated than the media makes it out to be, I think. So
I think it's a topic that's very taboo for a lot of Americans and Canadians, I would say, too. And yeah, I've traveled a lot. I've gone to a bunch of powwows. The bands have played at reservations. I've spoken to a lot of natives. We have a lot of native Killswitch has a lot of Native American fans. I've had great conversations, sad, in-depth, but also great conversations with a lot of people. And you're right. A lot of people are not aware because it's not in the media and the history books don't tell it. They tell it a certain way. You know, it's the old saying about history. History is written by the people who conquered and ruled and slaughtered and killed. You're not going to read about the tragedies. And then the tragedies you do read about, they're manipulated. You know, they're edited. So, you know, I think it is worth There's definitely value in talking about what you're raising awareness to. And I do urge you to do that, because I know there's a lot of people that don't have a voice, that can't speak about how bad it is in this country for tribal people, native people.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely a huge part of it for me. And I don't really get to political and stuff in Black Braid. Like, it's not really a goal of mine. Like, almost everything is based in, you know, nature worship and things of that nature for Black Braid is the heavy overlying theme. And I don't really want to stray too far from that. So with Black Braid, it's almost more like I'm addressing it indirectly, like just for me to, like, it's kind of motivation to do better. When I see all these native kids and stuff, you know, clinging to Black Braid so early on, and I've just got such a strong native fan base already, and like they just want someone that looks like them in the metal scene that they can look up to. And it's more in my mind just about that, just about being there. And it's like, I could be playing Metallica covers, you know, it doesn't have to be native at all. It's just the fact that I'm doing something. Kind of feels great to me.
It's as the old saying goes, that everything is political, right? And just by the nature of you being you, you're inspiring people that identify with you. And in turn, it's empowering you to want to do more. And, you know, then you get this connection, and you get people from different parts of the country and, you know, different walks of life coming together under this same common experience, which, as you say, doesn't need to be overtly outspoken in the messages, but just by being there and, you know, celebrating that way of life, then, you know, it brings people together, and it is amazing. I want to ask you about the, not to kind of keep going back to it, but the whole nature theme throughout. Have you had throughout your life moments or instances where you've been out in nature and you've had huge revelations, if we can get, you know, a little bit spiritual and lofty, as we like to do on this show, because it's a recurring theme. We love to talk about it. And I think a lot of my spirituality that I've discovered in recent times, really through doing this show and the conversations that we've shared, has come from nature, and solely nature, and an idea of a higher power through just the wild, great, vast outdoors.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. It's funny because it's like, yeah, it's that's really it. Like, nature, nature's it. And a lot of people don't realize, like, how easy it is to have, so, like, a spiritual or mind-bending, life-altering experience or something. Like, all you really need to do is just take the time. Like, that could, if anyone just goes into nature for long enough, it'll happen, you know? It's such, like, a divine chaos that's literally surrounding us, and we live in it. But humans somehow are, like, conditioned to kind of separate ourselves from it in modern day. Like most people will, like, live in their house and they'll be like, oh yeah, the nature is outside, or like the wilderness is over there. Like, no one sees themselves as a part of nature anymore. They see it as like a thing that they can go to when they want to experience it. They don't, you know, no one is really sees themselves as experiencing nature at all times, even though we are. Like, you wake up and it's raining. Like, you don't have control over that, you know?
Or even just by breathing, right? The one thing we need to do to be alive, and that's taking in air from the earth.
Yeah, absolutely. Breathing, you know, walking. I mean, you can't do anything without nature. I mean, you're walking. Every step you take, you're walking on the ground. Even if you're in your house, you know, what are you walking on? Wood? Concrete? It all came from outside, you know? So it's, in, like, everything we own, I mean, I could talk about it for years, you know, but there's so much to say. But yeah, it's just like, it's crazy how it's obviously a really sacred, kind of divine thing. Like, magic happens in nature all the time, and we kind of train ourselves not to see it. Or society trains us from a young age to kind of, like, let go of it and not see it because it's not considered to have any value in like our modern culture. To be able to look at the world in a different way. But yeah, to answer your question, I mean, like how I grew up, I just never saw it any differently, you know? Like I go out there and I almost, half the time I'm in nature, I see something that it makes me question things or makes me think a different way, you know?
And I feel like a lot of times society wants you to pass off those little miracle moments or those connection moments as coincidence. And what I have learned from spending time with native culture and spending time with natives and going to powwows and talking to those people who embody that culture on a regular basis, they tell you to look out for certain animals. Certain animals mean certain things in the spiritual world and totem. And since I've moved up here, I've had these crazy experiences where, you know, if I tell people, which I don't speak a lot about it, but if I tell certain people, they're like, ah, you just saw that fox staring at you on coincidence when you first moved in. Like day one, when I moved in here, I walked out my front door in the first day and I was in a really dark place and there's a fox sitting across the road staring right at me eye to eye and it didn't run. It didn't move. And I was telling my friends about it, like, oh, that's crazy. And then I told one of my friends who's native and he's like, that's a sign. You need to look that up on the totem. It's telling you to be cautious. And he just ran down this whole thing. And I was like, whoa, that's exactly what I'm going through. So since that moment, I've had many experiences like that and I'll consult and there is truth, like crazy weird truths that happen to me out in nature and some shit that I won't discuss on this program or to anybody, but it's changed my life for like, you know, when I first reached out to you, I was kind of hinting at it. I was like, dude, amazing nature, crazy. But I've had like crazy stuff happen and I don't think I would have the wherewithal or the language for it had I not consulted with Native Americans to teach me, like, this is what this means. And I see a lot of the animals in your video and your imagery that I've interacted with in some way, shape, or form. And there's real power in that. And you showing them on your video and sort of paying tribute to them. That's another reason why I'm really attracted to what you're doing. Because I can relate to it on some other level.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more with that. I mean, yeah, like you said, I guess to expand on that, with the animals, I mean, what we were just talking about before too, about how humans kind of, we were trained by, you know, our families and society and whatever, to kind of like let that go at a young age and to not look at the world in the same ways, and you know, they kind of like pound it out of us and make you conform to like whatever modern society is. But with animals, you know, that never happens. And I firmly believe this. I tell people this all the time. We consider ourselves to be like superior as humans because of all of our technological advancements and stuff, but when it comes down to it, like I think most animals are smarter than us. Like almost all of them are a lot smarter than humans. And we kind of look at them as being lesser often because they don't strive to do the same things we do. You know,
their skills don't serve like a capitalist model of
there it is.
Commerce yeah. and trade and you know, design and things like that. But actually their wisdom is ancient and it's, you know, key to survival in their case. And that's all there really is just the essence of being alive and staying alive.
Yeah. And that's like it plays into what he was just talking about with the fox. Like when you live like that, you don't know any other way, you know, like animals have lived their whole lives like that and they know nature is sacred in ways that humans will never understand because they don't forget it, you know? It's the opposite. Like, they're raised in it, and they understand it more than we ever could. And that's what comes out, too, with the messages and stuff, too. Like, almost all animals, like, with the way they're in tune, you know, some more than others, but with the way they're in tune with their environment, and the spirits and everything else. Like if you are ha struggling or something like that, or you don't even have to be struggling, you know, if you're going through anything intense and emotional, like animals know that. They probably know more about what's going on with you than you do. Because again, when you teach yourself not to kind of look at the natural world and the occurrings of it, like you lose a lot of yourself too, and it's easy to, I mean, that's where depression comes from, you know? Animals don't really get depressed without a reason. Like animals can get depressed if a loved one dies or if there's a major injury or like a life-changing event, but they don't get depressed just walking around day to day eating food like humans do. Because they don't have time and they don't give themselves the means to get depressed, you know? Like we most of the human depression, like where 90% of us are depressed, just comes from things we've done to ourselves, like technology and, you know, other things. It's a different way of living for them. So like when humans are suffering like that, we kind of, again, because we're so immune to it, because we're all in it. Like we look at someone and you can't really tell what they're going through. Because everyone's going through something and we're all human and we see past it, you know? But animals, I think, have a little more insight into that, and it's a little harder for them to ignore almost.
Yeah, it's the spirit world that I think it does exist. And I think regardless of people's religious views or spiritual views, you can't deny that there is a spiritual energy there. You know, I say even just go out in nature and be alone for a certain amount of time, going back to what you said earlier, and sit with yourself. Don't distract yourself with a phone. Sit alone in nature and answers come to you. And I don't think that's just a random thing. I think there's a deliberate spiritual nature that flows all throughout the forests and mountains and streams. It's there. It's speaking to us at a regular basis. All we've got to do is listen. And in order to listen, you have to sort of just be still. And I found in my life, those have been some of the most profound moments where I'm not having someone telling me how to fix things, or I'm not referencing a human ideology to save me from something. I go out and I'm discovered it when I become an empty vessel and allow that voice to speak through me. It's become a huge part of who I am, much to the chagrin of my religious family. But I've found more peace with the new way of life that I've been living than anything I've ever found in a church or anything like that. So I think church is a nice transition into black metal. Let's
Oh, killing the segues today. I
go.
like that. Yeah.
When did you discover black metal? When did you sort of see it as something you could relate to? Because I do see a similarity between the Northern European reclaiming of their heritage over the oppressed. Where does that come into play in your life, and how do you relate to it with the mindset of bridging that gap between Native American culture and black metal culture? Which, and second question, Native American black metal has been around for a while. Talk about that as well, if you can. So there you go. There's another heavy compounded question for you.
I mean, I've been listening to black metal for a good chunk of my adult life, you know? I mean, I probably first discovered it, don't know, maybe 20 years ago. Like, I was pretty young. Trying to think. I saw Opeth in probably like 2003 or something, and that was my first exposure to like more extreme Europe metal. I wouldn't really call Opeth black at the time. They're almost, I don't know what you would have called them. I guess they still call themselves Prague, but
Melodic metal, and just Opeth around that era. That's my favorite Opeth,
so
right?
good.
That whole
I
area.
saw them on, that was the tour they did when they put out Deliverance and Damnation, and it was like a double set for
I
each
saw that
album.
tour too. So good.
Yeah, and I actually went to that because Devil Driver was like the support on it. And at that point in my life, I think I was like 12 or 14 or something, I don't know. But I hadn't heard much. Like, American metal was my big thing. I love Killswitch. Like, Killswitch was one of the first metal bands I listened to.
I have to ask this because Jesse talks about this in his upbringing. Were your parents, you know, did they approve of these extreme bands coming into your life? Did they disapprove? Were they open and welcoming? Was it kind of just carry on, do your thing? What was their vibe?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they were always cool with it. They definitely thought it was stupid. You know, like, my parents don't really like metal still. But they've never been like, you can't listen to that. You know, like, they let me do my own thing. And as long as I didn't get, like, too extreme, I never got in trouble. I think the only time I ever got in trouble for music-related things was I remember in high school, once I wore, like, a Pantera shirt to high school. It had, like, a huge pot leaf on it. And they sent me home, and then I got in a ton of trouble for my mom that day. She's like, where'd you get the shirt or whatever? And that was, like, literally the only time I ever got scolded for music was because of Pantera.
Which is hysterical because now it's illegal here in the state of New York. Stupidity, people.
I know.
So Opeth opened the metal gates for you, pretty much. Going to see that show was a life-changing experience, or just the gates were opened?
Yeah, I would... almost life-changing. I mean, that really, like, before that, it was really U.S. metal for me. Like, I listened to Killswitch and Metallica and Lamb of God. And, you know, it just, like, I didn't realize there was a whole other scene over there that was that different from ours. And, like, after seeing Opeth, I'm like, holy shit, these guys are crazy. And then I started delving a little further into it. And, like, shortly after that, I actually discovered black metal. Like, I think the first black metal bands I ever heard were probably Dark Throne and Gorgoroth. And Gorgoroth was the one that really did it for me, honestly. That's, like, when I got hooked. Like, I'll never forget that either. That first, I'm not really a big fan of Gorgoroth either. Like, nothing against that, but just, like, not huge into a lot of the stuff they've done. But I think it's the first album they wrote. It might have been self-titled or called Pentagram or something. But they had this vocalist, Pest, who was only there for, like, one or two albums, the first one or two. And, like, the years that Pest was in there, his vocals are so fucking crazy and demonic, and, like, it's a little rawer and almost more funky, rock and rolly back then. But I had, like, some sampler that had a song on there with Pest called Crushing the Scepter. And I remember listening to that song, and I've pretty much been obsessed with black metal since then. Like, I've never heard anything like that to this day. It's still, like, I was really in it after that. I think that was probably the moment. But again, I didn't really start looking for that stuff until Opeth came around. So I'd say it's, like, equal parts them. Like, they were definitely the stepping stone to get me to black metal, even if they aren't completely black metal, you know?
Yeah, I've always liked the sound of black metal. I think for me, though, the sort of the dark part of it always seemed a little, I couldn't really relate to it, you know, because I always came from a place of light, my father being a minister and being raised that way, but also being a hardcore kid, you know, part of the positive hardcore scene. So everything in my upbringing was always positive, light, positive. So I was curious. I loved death metal because death metal kind of touched on different themes, you know, war and death, obviously, and injustices and stuff. But black metal was this weird inherent darkness. Part of it I did like was, like, sort of the desolation and the nature. And the part that I just never really could latch onto is the Satanism and, like, the trying to be evil. That being said, I've always loved that band Dissection. I think Dissection to me was, like, sonically just what I loved about black metal. But I've kind of always, like, I don't really talk about it much. It's not really my thing. And then I just when black metal started coming over to the States, and you had what people called sort of, like, false black metal, which was, like, guys that didn't look black metal that were sort of more indie rock looking and were playing black metal style. I thought it was interesting because it brought the sonic sound of black metal without the culture. And I think as much as I did like that, it still didn't feel like it fit. And then discovering you and seeing the native culture blend with black metal. Excuse me.
That's like, a weird noise.
Mucus, man. Then it was like, oh, this to me is brilliant. That marries the sound as well as the ideology of, you know, nature and those themes. So when did that start happening for you? I'm ignorant to this. You're my first discovery of native black metal, and apparently it's been around for a while. So talk about that. When did you start seeing that start to happen?
Honestly, with that, only really recently. Like, it's been around for a few years, but I would say it's really imploded on itself this year, like indigenous black metal, and become way bigger. But yeah, growing up, I'd say until my mid to late 20s, native metal wasn't really on my radar at all. If it was there, like, I wasn't hearing about it too much. But you know, I still love all the other black metal. It's funny you brought up Dissection, because I think they're probably the best black metal band ever. Like, I love everything about Dissection. Like, their sound is amazing, and I really love their groove oriented stuff. Like, Reign Chaos is probably my favorite album they put out. And Black Braid is definitely kind of going in that direction a bit more. Like, there's a lot more groove on the second album, to be sure. We won't get into that, but yeah. As far as like the content of it goes, kind of the same for me. Like, I obviously always love the nature and kind of the sadness and the extremes and the parallels between that and the wilderness and stuff has always drawn me to it. When I was younger, in, you know, like in my teens and early 20s and stuff, I did like the satanic stuff a lot. I definitely never identified as a Satanist or anything. Like, I always saw it as a little gimmicky, you know? And I mean, I still do, but like, at the same time, I still love it. Like, it's pretty cheesy a lot of the time, but I'll still listen to satanic black metal if it's good, you know? But yeah, with that stuff, like, I've been pretty anti-Christian my entire life, you know, just because of my upbringing and the history we have with them and everything. Christians have done some really awful things to Native Americans. So even like not identifying as a Satanist or anything like that, when I first discovered that music and I was young, I already loved, you know, I was like borderline goth kid and loved all this dark and depressing shit. So like, yeah, I was eating it up back then. You know, they're talking about raping Christ and all this other shit. Like, I loved it. Like, it's, you know, even if I didn't really believe in the Satanism aspect of it, just kind of spitting in the face of Christianity, and no matter how you want to do it, it was so awesome in my mind. And that just drew me in more to it. And I think, like, throughout my 20s, as I, like, grew up and learned more about myself and my own brain and shit, I kind of became less and less interested in it, like, just because it did seem, it never really felt genuine to me, but it felt less and less the older I got, you know. I was less connected with it, and because I mean, when you're growing up, at least for me, you know, when I was a kid, metal hardcore kid or whatever, I thought Satan was cool, and you know, evil's cool and all the dark shit's cool. And then they're cool concepts, but as I like, as I grew older, I came to realize that, like, even though like Satanism is so anti-Christian, it's like still kind of conforming to even feed in to Satanism, because in the end, Satan's a fictional character invented by the Christians, and he's only there to embody things they don't like. Mm-hmm. Like, Satan was created by Christians for Christians, and it's a Christian concept in the end. And, you know, to believe in Satan is to believe in Christianity. Like, it's a part of Christianity, Satan is. No matter how you want to swing it, like, he's a fictional god made up by Christians, and you can't really believe in something like that without inversely kind of believing in Christianity, whether you
That's
believe
a hot take
in
right
God
there.
Or whatnot, you know, like Satan only exists because of the Christians, you know. Maybe it's a concept they made up to embody things they don't like, but it's still a Christian concept and a Christian creation, and it's like, I don't think there's a Satan or, you know, the devil or anything like underground and burning caverns, like that, you know, he embodies all the evil in us. Like, it's a sweet concept and it's cool. It makes for some really sweet metal, but like, it's never been something I felt to be true in my heart. You know,
it's sort of a paradox that you're right. I think you bring up a very valid point. The people who are so hell bent on quote unquote worshiping Satan, you know, you kind of have to acknowledge the opposite, right? I mean, very much as people who acknowledge God and Christianity have to acknowledge the devil. It's kind of a paradox. And I grew up with all that stuff, and I agree to a degree. I'm not sure how I feel about an all encompassing dark being. I know there's definitely evil in the world. I know people do evil stuff, but I don't know if I'm comfortable putting a name on that. But I think you bring up a very valid point. And also, while you were speaking too, it kind of just hit me. Like, yeah, it makes sense. You look at black metal, and in the Northern European people are talking about reclaiming their culture and how churches were built on, you know, pagan burial grounds. And Christianity really strong-armed itself. You look at the Crusades, a lot of killing and forcing people to believe, you know. And again, that's part of history that's sort of glossed over too, but there's been a lot of horrible genocide, massacre, I mean, you know, native people, in the name of Christianity. And of course that's gonna spark a reaction. And when you're young and you can find something you can identify with, for me, it was like punk rock and hardcore, you know, fuck the system. You know, we're living in a corrupt system that's rigged and keeping poor people down. Like, I totally was like, that's me. And when I was young, you talked to me when I was in my teens, I would probably annoy you with my conspiracy theories and my anger. As I've gotten older and wiser, I still believe a lot of the same things, but you sort of like frame it better. And you are able to live in more harmony with yourself, which I think is what you're alluding to. It's just part of growing up and sort of learning how to figure out who you are and then creating your art around that. And I think you do a great job with that. I want to commend you on what you're doing with your art, because you do say a lot of things without saying a lot of things, whether that's your presence or the imagery you're putting out there. And I think it's fascinating. So, of course, when you're young, you're going to hear this music that's raging against people who slaughtered your people. Like, that's a no-brainer. And I think it's also why it's a no-brainer that native culture has taken on black metal. So it's really interesting to hear that. That's fascinating stuff.
You mentioned true black metal as well. And I think it's interesting that, you know, the culture that gave birth to that scene and yours are very similar in the ways we just pointed out, and it's almost become a truer version of itself in the form that you're presenting. And I love that. It's like, in the same way that punk was invented by a bunch of white kids, but then you get a band like the Bad Brains who give it a whole new level of depth and intent. I would love to know, is there any exchange, you know, between your little culture and part of the black metal spectrum and the quote unquote true end? And would they acknowledge you guys as true black metal? Do you know if that exchange has taken place yet, or is taking place?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm sure they got mixed feelings. I mean, it doesn't really matter in the end. People are going to think whatever they want, but the response has definitely been overwhelmingly positive, because I think in the end, like, kind of why I made Black Braid and why there is no satanic themes in Black Braid, I think it just comes down to really like wanting to make something that was genuine and from my heart. And I didn't want it to feel, you know, like, I didn't really want it to feel like it was produced or made to be a certain way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, you know, people that are accepting of it, it's because of that. Like, in the end, it's really, it comes down to emotion and experience and whatever that might mean. I think people are just looking for, when it comes to black metal, in the end, most people just want it to feel heavy and emotional, you know, and they want there to be some sort of depth there, no matter what it is. Or, you know, what your views on life are. Like, there's a lot of atheist black metal out there. There's a lot of pagan black metal. So you could really do anything. I think it's been pretty well received, and I think it's probably mostly just due to the fact that it's not, I don't really make stuff up, you know. I write about things that matter to me in the end.
Yeah, it's genuine, and it comes off that way for sure. It doesn't feel like you're trying to do something. You're just embodying what you already are, which I think is really important as an artist, because I think people can tell. You know, people can tell when you're putting on a front and you're putting on a show to get popular or whatever the case may be. And what I do like about you too is your humility. Like, I feel like when I first started talking to you, you were pretty unsure about, you were just like, yeah, I don't know, I'm just kind of doing this. And like, now that you've, like, you know, started to form a band, you're gonna be playing shows, or have you played a show yet?
No, not yet. First one is 2 or 3 weeks away, the 10th of September. We play in LA, and that'll Killer. Be the first show.
Killer.
In Long Beach, actually, which I guess is not LA, but it pretty much is. But there's that, and then there's the October show in New York City at St. Vitus, and that's all we got on the map right now. We're definitely going to be doing a lot next year, but I'm kind of like, this is the calm before the storm right now. And,
good though, man. Just, go ahead.
Yeah.
I just like, yeah, I'm
I just want to get
I'm
these
excited for you. I'm excited for you, dude.
Get these two out of the way before we really start talking about other shit and branching out. But, yeah, I mean, it's gearing up real fast. Things have definitely taken off in the last few months, and we'll be a full-fledged touring act pretty soon. I mean, I didn't think that was in the cards for us, but you know, the demand's there now, and I quit my job like 2 months ago or whatever.
Nice.
Because I'm making so much money. Not that much, but wasn't making much before anyway, so it wasn't really hard to replace my income. But yeah, I make enough to get by with Blackbraid now, and it's demanding enough attention that it is my career now, which has been pretty surreal. Like, I've been a full-time, you know, 40-hour work week guy my whole life. So these last 2 months, like, I probably stopped working in April or something, and it's like, I've never really not been working. Like, I'm working on Blackbraid, but it's surreal because it's different. You know, it's my own art instead of a thing I go to and clock in or whatever. So,
well, congratulations, dude. That's exciting. It's cool to hear. Yeah, I definitely, when I discovered you, I definitely did a little blast of like, oh, you guys need to check this out. So your Vitus show will be some of my people there checking you out. And, you know, I just think when you, as an artist, when you see something that you genuinely relate to and like, I feel like it's my duty as a music lover to spread that. So, and that's, you know, having you on here and to continue to push what you're doing, because I'm a fan. First and foremost, dude, the only reason we're even talking is because I'm a fan of what you do, which is pretty funny, you know, if you think about it. The fact that I reached out to you and you were just kind of like, I don't know, this is kind of a thing I'm doing. And now, like, you're doing it, dude. That's pretty
amazing.
Congratulations, my friend.
Man, it is surreal. Because, yeah, that's how I went into it. I mean, there's so much black metal. I mean, there's probably 10 independent guys who put out a black metal album today that I don't know about, you know? Like, it's such an oversaturated scene, and there's so much going on. And it's so easy for great metal to fly under the radar completely unnoticed. So, yeah, when I started this, I was really just doing it for myself. I liked the songs a lot, and I wanted to put them out because I felt like I would be kicking myself one day if I never put them out. So I just said, fuck it, I'll put them out there. And didn't really expect much to happen because, again, like, even if they are good, which I thought they were pretty good to start, but there's so much great metal that goes nowhere. So it's really easy to just not be successful these days or get overlooked. So I had zero expectations going into Blackbraid. I was almost expecting it to fail, to be honest, just because of how much metal's out there. And it was more a thing I was doing for myself. And I've really had to step back and reevaluate kind of everything in the last couple months, because it's like an actual entity now, and it's yeah, it's been crazy.
Well, I think what you've done, which is why you're getting the attention you are, is because it's not just the music. It's the full package with you, and it's right there from the get-go, the visuals, the whole presentation of it. And I think so many bands don't take into account that fact. You know, some people are purists in their mind, and they go, well, I just make music, and that's what I do. But to be an artist, and certainly a successful one, you need that overall, I hate to say the word, but brand, that package. You go, boom, this is what this is. And you can do that and still be authentic and still be true and still have credibility. And obviously, you know, the fact that you're so up with your visuals, and I've been checking out your photography page today as somebody who's just myself starting to get into photography in a more serious way. And it's beautiful, man. Your nature photography is incredible. And I love the shots from all over Iceland, the place I've been and spent a lot of time, an amazing place. You must have got a lot of inspiration from that, you know, both musically and visually. But yeah, I think the full package is there, man. And it's I have to celebrate and commend you for that, is that absolute three-dimensional 360 degree. Here is the thing. Enjoy it.
Yeah, that definitely helps. And a lot of that is my wife. I have to give her most of the credit, because like I write the music, and you know, the vision is mine, but she puts most of it together for me. Like makes it a cohesive thing that I can show people. You know, she runs my web store and the website. She does all my design.
A formidable couple then, man. Love it.
Yeah, she's helping me with these. She's running all these orders. Like we got a ton of pre-orders we're doing now. So she does pretty much everything behind the scenes, and she's also great at photography and videography and stuff. So between the two of us, we really don't. Yeah, it is. We definitely have a major advantage, I can't lie. Like, I think that's definitely a huge part of it, is just how active we've been. And, you know, I make an effort to keep pushing Blackbird stuff every week. Even I don't have to lose the momentum, you know, whether it be new photos or video or anything really. But yeah, I think it all comes back to kind of being like a multidimensional thing. Like even like you said, with the nature photography, like, so much of that is so ingrained in Blackbird and the nature. And like, I cherry pick my own photos for Blackbird, like my wildlife photography photos and stuff. Sometimes when I don't have anything to post, I'll just throw one of those up there with some lyrics. And they'll do equally well, you know, cause it's really all just kind of based in nature in myself when it comes back to it. So it's been pretty easy to kind of drive it, I guess, cause it feels so organic to begin with.
That's great too. You guys are total DIY, and that's the way to do it. You're not relying on, you know, a record label. You're doing your own orders. You guys are doing everything in house. That's commendable. It's very punk rock too. I love that. And I love that you give credit to your wife. When did you guys meet? Like, what's the story behind that powerful meeting? Cause clearly you guys are a power couple here. That's pretty amazing,
man. I want to say, I think it's been 6 or 7 years since I met her. And we got married, what, 3 years ago? In 2019? Yeah, 3 years. So we met, yeah, in our late 20s, mid-20s, in Albany, actually. We were both living in Albany because we both went to undergrad there. I met her at like a metal show or something. I met her at Fusebox. You ever been to that place? Yeah. It was like goth night or something. Yeah.
I've DJed the goth night, and my ladies dance there. She's pole danced there on goth night. Yes. I know very well Fusebox. Yeah. And tragedy, the guy owns it. It's a great place.
Yeah. It's awesome. Yeah. We met at Fusebox on one of those little goth nights. And yeah, we met like an old fashioned couple. We met at the bar, you know. but yeah, I mean, we hit it off from that. I've pretty much been seeing her since then. Like, we click pretty instantly, and pretty much like a fairy tale from there, I guess. Like, we've been inseparable since, so now we're married. But I met her in Albany, yeah, maybe 6-7 years ago.
There's going to be a documentary about this story one day. I can already see it. Just keep doing what you're doing, man. It's amazing. And she does cosplay and stuff, right? So she's super in that kind of like creative visual costume design, all of that stuff, which again, obviously, you know, sits perfectly with what you're doing. It's kind of a fairy tale, man.
Yeah. And I mean, the bigger part of that for her too is the behind the scenes thing as well, which a lot of people don't realize, but for she works with a lot of other influencers and creators too. And she like will build their web stores and their websites and run, she's like a web admin on the side, and she does all that stuff, like just like she did for me. So she's got her hands in a lot of stuff. She definitely knows how to do it all. It's pretty crazy.
Love it. Man, I got to tell you, this has been a total pleasure. I am excited for you. I look forward for the future for you. I really wish I could go to that Vitus show. I'm sure you're going to have a blast there. I mean, LA too, but Vitus is like, I used to go there like at least once a week when I lived in the city. It's the perfect place for Black Braid to show New York City what you're all about. Yeah, I'm going to continue to keep my finger on the pulse of what you're doing and continue to be a fan. And maybe one day we'll hang when I get up to the Adirondacks, but it's been a total pleasure. Thanks for taking your time, man. And I know that everybody here watching and listening will be paying attention to what you're doing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's been a pleasure, man. I'm so pumped. That Vitus show actually sold out already. It's been sold out for a few weeks, which is nuts.
That's great.
Like over a month away and it's already gone, but yeah, I'm really pumped. I'm happy to talk to you guys anytime. This is awesome. So
yeah, we'll definitely keep people posting on what you're doing. And, you know, we have our Patreon and we have our Discord, and I'm actually going on the Stoke the Fire Discord and recommending music to people. So I'll do a post today about you and let people know you're up and coming on an episode. So we'll keep the promo train running for you on this end as well.
Sweet. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Great to meet you, dude. Thanks for coming on the show. Good luck with the LA and the New York shows. And yeah, look forward to hearing some more music for you when the world is ready.
Yeah. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
John, take care, brother.
Thanks, man.
You too, dude.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.